360's The Week That Was, the most listened to hour in Territory Radio. The Territory leaders break down this week's big issues.
The top ends weather, firstly. We are, it's cloudy out there. Medium chance of light rain and a thunderstorm this morning, apparently, but I'm not sure whether that's going to happen. We'll keep an eye on things. The top ends weather, we're heading for a top of 26, 29 in the rural area, and 22 degrees in Katherine. Beautiful weather in Katherine. The Mix 104.9 sweat factor with over 46,000 listeners. You can get Mix 104.9 working for your business. The UV index is a very high, top of 10. The top ends tide times. Great deals on the Quintrex and Stabbycraft aluminium boats and the entire Yamaha outboard range. You can see the experienced team at In and Outboard Marine today. And we're heading for a low tide of 2.5 metres at 2:30 today. In Darwin right now, it's only 22 degrees. It's 23 in the rural area. And in Katherine, it's also sitting on 22 degrees. Glorious weather out there. And joining me in the studio this morning for the week that was, we've got the opposition leader, Leah Fenocchiaro. Good morning.
Good morning, Katie. It's freezing out there.
It is quite cold, isn't it? Kezia Purick, the Speaker of the Northern Territory and member for Goyder. It must be cold in the rural area.
Look, as usual, my chook's feet are iced to their poles.
Oh, no naked gardening today, Kezia.
No gardening today.
Well, too cold for that.
If there was, you know what we'd be looking like.
Katie's now lost it, so I'll introduce myself.
Natasha Files, the Health Minister. Good morning.
Morning, everyone in Nycliffe's wearing their hoodies, but they have to take the hood off for school, apparently, Katie.
Oh, there you go. Can't keep the hood on. Got to let your ears freeze. Lucky, because Maddie Cunningham had his on earlier today, your hoodie, didn't
you?
Yeah,
I'm surprised that I didn't get a scolding from Miss Finch this morning, actually, but I managed to survive. It's funny, are we the only non-born and breds here, Wolfie?
Gezia was accidentally born in Brisbane.
That's right.
Accidentally born in Brisbane.
No, Natasha.
You can pick them though, can't you? When the temperature drops below 20 degrees, walk around like we're in Antarctica or something.
And you look like your clothes have come out of a rag bag.
That's the problem. When you dust them off, you're like, oh, jeepers.
I can't wear those
from the 80s.
Exactly. Yeah,
the
right.
People that weren't born and bred, you can tell how long they've been here on a cold day. Because, I get out...
Sporting
my 2007 fashion.
I've got your old jeans on. I think the worst is when you go to Canberra and you're not appropriate. You know, it's like, oh, do I need to wear stockings? Do I even own something
I tell you what, it is absolutely beautiful weather. It's so nice to get this cool weather. And Katherine has got a pretty cold weekend they're in for, which is lovely. We're in for a cool weekend, definitely. Well, let's get right into it. There is so much to discuss. And let's talk about the fact that we're COVID-19 free. We know that there are now no active cases of coronavirus in the Northern Territory after the remaining patient was cleared earlier this week. The person had contracted COVID-19 while on overseas deployment with the Australian Defence Force. Now, all 30 of the cases of COVID-19 diagnosed in the Northern Territory were connected to interstate or overseas travel. We are the envy of the nation, I think you'd have to say at the moment.
Yes, Katie. So that last person tested negative earlier this week, and that means that we have no active cases. We mustn't become complacent. But I think it's a moment for the Territory to reflect. So often we're seen as the poor cousin or a little bit behind. And really through coronavirus, our health professionals and those people that support them have led the way. So not only have they provided advice and cared for Territorians to have us in this situation, we also reached out and we helped those evacuees. We went to Western Australia and helped through the Critical Care and Trauma Centre, Len and his wonderful team. We went to Tasmania. And so I think it's just an opportunity to pause for a moment and reflect upon that good work and that we can lead.
It might be time to give the old failed state cliche a rest for a while. Maybe it's time to drum up the statehood campaign again, Kezia, now that we've...
We
could if we weren't so broke.
Hey, lucky I'm between you two. But it's like Natasha says, it's well known. I mean, we all know in different areas where it's sport or other things, we do punch well above our weight as Territory people. And I think this has shown glaringly that the Territory is way ahead when it comes to medical care, medical management, crisis management to do with a medical emergency. And I think that puts us in good stead to show the rest of the country, not what to do, but how we went about, or how the government went about with industry and with, you know, community, to look after ourselves, and particularly to look after the most vulnerable. And we know that that's a lot of the people living in the bush, a lot of people in Aboriginal communities, and a lot of elderly people. So, yeah, I think everyone should be congratulated.
Yeah, absolutely. And we do know, though, that the discussion now heads to the borders and whether we should be in a situation where we're looking at the pathway forward, I think, for reopening those borders. Nobody's suggesting that they're opened immediately, but the discussion point has really turned to if and when and how those border restrictions are lifted. I caught up with Michael Bridge, who's also, well, he's obviously the chair of the tourism, the Northern Territory Government's Tourism Rebound Task Force, and he flagged with me earlier in the week two dates, in his opinion, first off August 1, but he didn't expect that the Northern Territory Government would open those borders before September 1. Now, obviously the date with the August 1 would mean that we've got a bit of a jump on some other places in the sense that we'd be able to get people visiting the territory for what is set to be an unbelievably busy month for us with a number of major events. And then September 1 is sort of largely being touted, I think, as the date that all of Australia opens up. But we've still got a number of states and territories that aren't overly keen to open up. Ourselves and Queensland, I think, are probably leading that charge, and WA.
Katie, it's interesting when you look at the stats. Queensland, the Northern Territory, South Australia, Western Australia and Tasmania are locked down. They're the states that have only a handful of cases or no active cases. When you look across to New South Wales and Victoria, New South Wales has got well into 300 active cases, closer to 400, and Victoria's got close to 100 active cases. So, I mean, obviously their population is a factor in that, but I think we, in opening our borders, need to be very conscious that all of this good work can be wiped in just one case. We'll see community transmission. The economic impact of that will be huge. We know businesses are doing it very tough, but we know what will be even tougher is if we open up and then we have to close it all back down. Our Chief Health Officer says that the border restrictions are the most effective measure to date in controlling coronavirus. So we certainly hear the anxiety from community. We would love to be open, but we have to protect the community.
Well, we're in May at the moment, and look, like I said, nobody's suggesting that we rush to reopen the borders, but I think what everybody is talking about at the moment is what benchmarks really need to be set in terms of it then being deemed appropriate for those borders to open. You know, is it a situation here where we need any other state to be free of new cases of coronavirus for a certain period of time? We know that South Australia is obviously doing very well, as is Western Australia. There's some states that are doing very well without, you know, not having that community spread. So could we realistically open ourselves up in a measured way and with some different protocols in place to be able to allow that to happen and allow some of that business to be able to continue on? You know, industries like the Cattlemen's Association obviously are being affected. There's and tourism, you know, places, obviously tourism.
Hospitality.
That's right. There's no doubt that it's having a big impact on industry.
So, Katie, we know the health crisis has caused an economic crisis. Last Friday, what we did and what will happen on June the 5th, easing further restrictions, those biosecurity zones going in the territory, creates more risk. And every other jurisdiction around the world that has eased restrictions has seen a direct correlation in increasing cases. You're right, we need to watch very closely what's happening across the borders. ACT went coronavirus free. They were the first jurisdiction to do so. They now have cases again. So because this virus is like no other, it's so mild, some of the symptoms in terms of people spreading it without knowing so, and it could have such a devastating effect.
What do though? Do we just go, all right, well, we're closed. We're not reopening.
Katie, I've had quite a bit of feedback just in the last week when this opened of the borders and the pressure being put on government from industry and business, but I've had particularly more mature people in their age, and they've said, please tell the government don't open the borders. So, and they're sensible people. They're not being sort of course, they're being selfish. We all are. But the feedback that I'm getting is they don't want the borders open yet. Clearly, they know the borders will have to open one day because they want to be able to travel. They want family to come up and all that sort of stuff. But there is strong sentiment out there in the community to keep us protected. And I know, I get it, that comes at a cost, particularly for those industries like the van parks. I mean, they're all down anything up to 90%, some of them, and some of them may not recover. And everything that hangs off the sort of the grey nomad industry, but it's one of those really tricky balancing acts that a government has to manage, and I sympathise with the government and I sympathise with industry, but the people here in the Territory want to be protected. And most of the people I've been talking to, I say, well, it's not about you and me necessarily. It's about our vulnerable and our people who are compromised, wherever they may be, but particularly in the Aboriginal communities and in areas even in Darwin. And that's what people know and they accept.
I agree, Kezia, and that's certainly what people are telling me, that they feel more comfortable if the borders are closed. But what we have here is a situation where the Chief Minister and the government are holding the cards very close to their chest. Now, they have access to all of the best professional and health advice. There's no question about that. Everyone else really is just speculating and trying to find a way forward. But what the Chief Minister is refusing to do is be open with Territorians around what that decision-making process looks like. Now, that might politically suit the government because it means that everyone has to be very tuned in to what the Chief Minister or you, Natasha, say every single day. But that is not giving business certainty and it is not giving confidence to Territorians about the future.
Katie, this we don't have requires, certainty. We don't have a
no,
crystal ball.
Natasha,
we don't know what's going
to
what happen
you
with coronavirus.
Need to do
we're not playing
is
politics
be more
with this.
Open
we're
with Territorians
lives.
Around what metrics you are looking at, whether or not there is an opportunity to pursue a agreement with some jurisdictions who are COVID-free, whether or not there can be a stage lifting, what type of time frames. No one's asking for any knee-jerk reactions. No one's asking for irrational decision-making and no one's asking for decision-making that's not led on the best available evidence.
Well,
but we do need transparency.
And I think that the point here is as well, earlier in the week, we had Professor Paul Kelly saying that there was no medical reason for Australians to be stopped from travelling interstate and that the federal government had never advised that they should be closed, those borders. And he said, from a medical point of view, I can't see why the borders are still closed. He said, just to let Mr McGowan, so obviously the Premier of WA, know, I'm a proud West Australian and he grew up in that state, but at this point in time, there's no medical reason why those borders were closed. So I suppose the thing is here that we're getting conflicting, we're getting conflicting messages, I suppose, from not only our medical professionals, but also all around the nation from our leaders at a time when I think what we need is for all of our leaders, i.e. the ones that are sitting on the board that meets or on, you know, in those meetings with the Prime Minister, where we should be able to have a pretty clear message to all of Australia about what protocols and what measures are in place when it comes to lifting the borders. We shouldn't have a situation where you've got Gladys Berejiklian saying, well, let's open the borders and everybody's welcome. And then you've got Anastasia Palaszczuk saying, absolutely not, we will not open the borders. And then you've got Michael Gunner saying pretty much the same. I just think that it's at this point in time that we still need those leaders to actually stick together, cooperate with each other and work out what's the best thing for Australians, not what's the best thing for them politically.
Katie, we were just talking about the Territory leading the way through this crisis. We acted on the health advice of our Chief Health Officer, and there was 2 points around the vulnerability of our population, aged people, Aboriginal Territorians, people with underlying health conditions, and the fact we didn't have community transmission. The first case of coronavirus in Australia was in late January. We didn't get a case till March 6. By shutting our borders early, we're ahead of the game. We're not going to forgo all that work. And when we talk about
but
the
no
economic
asking
impact.
You to, Natasha.
If
no
you can,
no
I'll
one
you
is
finish,
asking.
Leah, so if you
well,
could let me finish,
you,
please.
You interrupted me quite a lot. I just want to reaffirm the fact that no one is asking you to ignore or undo any of that. We're just asking for transparency and decision making, and bring Territorians along with you on what this process is and what the future is going to look like. Because business rely on it, Territorians rely on it, and it's only right that people feel part of the process.
Look, yesterday we hit 5 million of cases of coronavirus around the world that have been diagnosed. Here in the Territory, it was only 2 months ago that we were preparing, that we saw our first case in early March. We never thought we'd get to this point in May and be coronavirus free for now, but we're one case away from community transmission, which can undo that work. It will stop us from going out to cafes, restaurants, stop us from going to work, and people need to be conscious of that.
There's quite a few messages coming through here. I'll just read a couple of them out. There's one that says, old school Territorians will want the NT closed. Business will die. which is maybe what the NTG wants because they keep getting paid. Oh, well, it will stay a little country town. Another one here that says, good morning, if the NT borders are closed, why am I seeing an increase in vehicles with interstate number plates with touristy-looking passengers? The WA number plates especially. Friends have noticed this too. That one there from Diane. There's one here from Jason that says, other states should definitely be COVID-free for a month before we let them in. Closing down again now would be worse than the initial close down. Businesses that survive this would be wiped out a second time. If it happens, Darwin will be a ghost town in a year, says Jason.
Katie, I mean, they're all good messages. I'm not sure what a tourist looks like, you know, versus what a Territorian looks
like.
Well,
maybe they're wearing modern winter clothes.
They've got shorts and a singlet on today.
They're not wearing their 2010 hoodie.
They're going for a swim.
Yeah. Pretty clothes or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I think I hear the messages and I hear what business people say, but I think what Natasha said and I think what we all agree, and it happened with the Spanish flu early in the century, is we don't want a second wave potentially, you know, whether it be a little small wave in the territory or a big wave in our country. So, you know, governments all around the country are doing what this government's done, trying to prop up business and do tradie schemes and this scheme and that scheme. And that's all fine.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, there's a role to play. But I just know the feedback I get from my constituents and others, and they are very concerned at the government opening the borders, and they're supportive of the borders saying, for the time being. And of course, there'll be a time in the future when they have to open. They have to, because you can't have, you know, the restraint of trade and people not travelling.
But what triggers that reopening? I think people want to understand, does it mean we have to have zero cases in Australia? Does it mean we can do a zero cases situation with one state, two states, a couple of states? People don't know what that future looks like, at what point it's going to be okay. And so it's really important that the government provide those metrics, that information, so that people can feel like they're working towards something, so that business can really understand some of the tough decisions they've got to make.
Katie, I'd just like to point out, Leah, every week you're briefed by the Chief Executive of the Department of Health and the Police Commissioner, the Territory Controller. We have been completely bipartisan around this. We have not played politics. You have had access to information. These are questions all of us would love a crystal ball to know what is going to happen next week, next month.
Is that sort of thing coming into your thinking, though? Are you having those discussions about what the metrics would be, what prompts a decision to open the borders, or at the moment is it just they're closed and we're keeping them closed?
No, I mean, it comes up inadvertently in conversation. It comes up formally, but the Chief Health Officer...
So what are the metrics that you're looking at as far as...
It's what's happening across the border. So what we see in the next few weeks, in the next few months across the borders, as the southern states ease restrictions, because where we've seen the easing of restrictions, we see outbreaks in cases. We've seen that in Sweden. We've seen that in Singapore. So as each... And the territory's ahead of the game, and I understand the frustration from some people because we acted early, we're easing restrictions. Nowhere else in the country, we all know it, are people going to the gym? Are they going out for meals like we are, which is driving some economic opportunity? We absolutely understand the importance of tourists and people coming in. But as they ease restrictions in those jurisdictions, New South Wales has got 380-odd cases. As they ease restrictions, we saw two cluster outbreaks in Victoria over the last week. Will they suddenly see cluster outbreaks and everyone bunker down again? So it is really difficult. There's no science, there's no formula. There's no crystal ball around this.
You are listening to The Week That Was, proudly brought to you by BTC Constructions. From residential, commercial to project management, they cover all aspects of construction. In the studio with me this morning, we've got Leah Finocchiaro, Kezia Purick, Natasha Files and Matt Cunningham. Now, there is so many messages coming through this morning, I've got to say. There's one here, it says, hi Katie, my daughter is going to Adelaide to visit her partner on Monday. She'll be self-isolating on her arrival, but what is bloody stupid, when she returns to start her new job in about 6 weeks, she has to self-isolate, which is fine, but she has to pay the $2,500 to do so, even though South Australia and the Northern Territory haven't got those new cases. Why haven't the government removed that fee?
So in terms of the measures that we put in place, we're certainly looking at those measures. In terms of some, we saw ACT go case-free and South Australia has also joined us. But the reality is that there could be more cases and they could be diagnosed. That's why we're expanding the testing regime. In terms of stepping forward, I think that that's something that we can look at. We're not just going to suddenly, you know, go, that's it, everyone can travel wherever they want in Australia and just jump on the plane. There is going to be an easing of restrictions, but we need to listen to the clinical advice advice around those restrictions easing.
Now, I want to talk about business at the moment. As we know, Friday last week at midday, some of those restrictions lifted. I'm not sure about you guys, whether you went out for a beer, but I've had a few businesses get in contact with us and say that while they had a great day on Friday, things have quietened down to some degree again. And I think that that's going to be the difficulty, obviously, for a number of businesses.
What I found in talking to some of the people, the Coolinga Tavern and the various pubs out in the rural area opened, of course, and did the usual things by their requirements. But I've met a couple of people elsewhere who are sort of the kind of people that go and have a few bets or have a couple of beers and whatever, you know, retired people. They don't want to do it.
They're worried.
They don't want to do it now because, you know, they've been away from the pub or the whatever for 3 weeks, and it only takes about 3 weeks to change behaviour.
To dry out.
Oh, well, that too, of us human. Yeah. So, you know, this fellow's, you know, he's a married man and, you know, he just likes doing keynote, and he said, I don't really want to go to the pub anymore, Kezia. I'm quite happy to take a few beers, go home with my mum and my missus or whatever. So, and I've read articles about this. I mean, they're open.
Yeah.
But we may not choose to go back and eat out as much because people have got into the pattern of having nice takeaways.
And that's obviously a big concern for a lot of our businesses.
A guitar player at your front gate, you know, whatever, you know, which I think is innovative and really, really good. But I think whilst they're open, the turnover's not going to be there.
I think it'll depend on the business. I think the businesses, like the ones in the city, the pubs and the bars and the restaurants in the city that rely on those tourists, it's going to be a real struggle for them. I was speaking to a guy who owns one of those businesses on the day it was announced that they were opening up, and he was really upset because he said it's actually going to cost us more money to open it up than it is at the moment to be closed, and that's yet they have an obligation, they feel, to be open because, you know, almost a community obligation to be open.
And most of them are able to afford to do that. They may not be actually able to afford to do that at this point in time, but what's keeping them afloat for many businesses at the moment is that JobKeeper payment. Now, it's been flagged by the Prime Minister that that will end in September. We haven't had a formal announcement, I don't think. You might know better than I, Matt. But that's the concern that I'm hearing from a lot of people at the moment, is that they're really worried that when that's stops, that they're going to suffer from some real hardship.
And they're talking about, and I think this would definitely be the case here, a lot of, they're calling them zombie businesses, that really, I mean, there would have been a lot of businesses that would have had a very thin margin to begin with here, given the economic downturn we've seen. Coronavirus probably tipped them over the edge, and they are probably just being held afloat at the moment by that JobKeeper.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the reality is, prior to COVID, our economy was already in really bad shape. Businesses were already closing their doors every single day, and you know, this has just added a level of hardship that's unimaginable for many of us who don't own and operate our own business. I think the issue is that the same volume of people are here. We only have Territorians now to be able to go and buy food or sit in restaurants. By easing those restrictions, it hasn't increased the volume of people that can move around, and so what we've actually done is increase businesses' overheads, because we've said open, and of course created an expectation then that businesses will be open, but that means all the lights are on, all the air cons are on, all the cool rooms are on, all the staff have to be paid, but it's the same volume of people moving through the doors, and that's why this question around borders is so important. We understand the health impact, but it's so important going forward, because some businesses might need to choose to go back into hibernation and wait it out, or make some very, very gut-wrenching decisions.
And I'd agree with that sentiment, in the sense that people need, I think, much like at the beginning of this, you know, we were told by the Prime Minister, all right, we're looking at 6 months here. For a lot of businesses, they thought, well, this is going to be too tough for us for 6 months. And until he announced that JobKeeper payment, there were plenty that were wondering whether they were actually going to be able to continue on. Now, that's kept them afloat. And now, I suppose, no one's got a crystal ball, and we know that, you know, that you, Filesy, don't. We know that the Chief Minister doesn't.
I wish I did.
But I guess what people want is just to have a bit of an understanding, because it helps them then in terms of the planning process when it comes to their business. And for some, they may say, do you know what? This isn't going to be viable for us anymore. We're not able to keep the doors opened. For others, they will say, okay, well, we can tough this out for another couple of months. Some may be doing really well and may be able to continue on as they currently are.
Katie, there'll be another probably adverse impact from the whole virus thing and businesses shutting, is with the level of, excuse me, with the number of people and the level of work from home, I think quite a high level of that is going to stay that way. Now, I know examples, not so much here, but down in Perth and a couple of other places, people I know, they already have work from home policies for a variety of reasons, particularly those businesses that involve computers, you know, designers, draftspeople, yep. all that sort of stuff. So some of them, some of the businesses, in the interest of efficiency and good productivity levels, will probably still have people working at home. And I know some businesses have already cut their rental space in the commercial building. So, you know, you're going to have that kind of downturn. So it's
and then that's less people buying their lunch.
Less people buying their lunch because they're at home. So it has that whole sort of domino effect.
That very thing is the splash on the front page of The Australian today, Kezia, and they're predicting, it says almost $50 billion could be wiped from the value of commercial office properties across Australia's major cities as a result of this. And I think we'll see it here as well.
And we already had extremely high vacancy rates.
That's exactly right. Look, there's so many facets of this to look at. One of the things that the Chief Minister said that he would do last week is announce a business commission. Mm-hmm. We're yet to hear who would be on that commission or what exactly it would entail. Leah, I know that the Country Liberal Party is saying today, you're saying that you'll create a task force guided by an external volunteer board that will aim to have approval timeframes for businesses and industry dealing with red tape. And that is on top of the announcement that you made yesterday regarding mining tax. I think the thing is here that we all know in the Northern Territory that we need to look to industry realistically to be able to get the economy moving. Gas is obviously a huge part of that discussion and manufacturing. Natasha, when are we going to hear the government actually announce who's on this commission and what it's going to do?
So the Chief Minister's finalising the Territory Economic Reconstruction Commission, which will be charged with leading the economy and the economic recovery post-coronavirus. And without the fact that we don't have a cure or a vaccine, it's going to be a grey area in terms of the virus itself, you know, and so this work will begin immediately looking forward in how we can step the economy through this. So he'll be announcing
that. How immediate is it going to be if he still hasn't announced it?
Well, Katie, that's probably a question for him, but it's certainly been through the cabinet process. He's been working with industry. He was busy consulting with them yesterday. So imminent, we'll be announcing that commission.
Today, I hear. Today.
Today.
I don't know. That's what I've been told.
Oh, well, that's a weird spreading.
Matt can be held to account not me for getting the date wrong, but
Leah,
we certainly...
Leah beat you to the post, I think.
Look, it's really important that the government move quickly. We've been very clear that to get our economy going, we are going to need to do things differently, and that's why I made the announcement about scrapping the hybrid mining tax and moving to a simplified model that encourages investment. That is not about making our miners pay less, and it's not about making miners pay more. It's about creating an incentive, an open door policy that means we will grow the size of the pie. And equally, my approvals fast track task force, which will be a combination of government and industry and business, will come together to really review all of the processes of government. I've said time and time again, we need our public sector and our private sector working in partnership together. That is how we will get ourselves out of this. And if we can cut down red tape, approvals timeframes, processes, then we will see a lot more private sector investment naturally happening throughout the territory because it will be easier to do business.
I think one of the things that we've seen through this whole crisis that's been really good to see is the way some businesses have been able to innovate.
Yep.
And for the first time in recent memory, the way the government has been able to get out of their way to allow them to innovate. Yeah. You know, a bloke wants to home deliver cocktails, all of a sudden, bang,
he's open. Yeah, that's right.
Overnight. And previously, I think this has been one of the biggest problems we've had here, and it's a mindset that we need to change. I mean, you consider a guy who owns a cafe around the corner from my place who's had chairs and tables out the front for 10 years, yeah. and all of a sudden one person complains, and he's got to go through the DCA, and he's got to go through the council, and he's got to go through licensing.
It's unbelievable.
And he ends up in the middle of a 4-month legal battle.
Yep.
To keep the chairs and tables out the front of his cafe that have always been there.
It's, I mean,
these are the things
notion.
That we just got to get rid of.
Yeah, and these are the things that slow our private sector growth down. One message I have heard loud and clear is really around, it's about approvals and processes across the board. And so by bringing together an experienced team within government, an experienced team external to government, and putting them together, they can advise me directly, you know, if we're successful in August, about what legislation needs to go, what regulation regulation needs to go, what processes can be made streamlined, more efficient, and let's get people who want to spend their money actually spending it.
Well, I mean, the big thing is, if you talk about a small business having to jump through those hoops to have bloody tables outside,
it's ridiculous.
What a mining company has to do, or imagine what a big business has to do. No, it would be unbelievable.
And it is unbelievable.
It's prohibitive.
It's fair in many ways, given the size and the scope of a mining project. But, I mean, it's the one good thing the CLP's done in a long time is to say that they're going to...
Thanks, Kezia.
Is that like a backhanded
I think
they've had a pretty good week, Kezia.
I feel like I've had a good week.
I've been busy in the rural area.
While you're in a good mood, Leah, can I ask you about your...
To the mining hybrid royalty. Now, when the government, Labor government, brought that in, it was just ridiculous. You know, it did create
I thought you were my friend.
It did create uncertainty, and it was the only jurisdiction in the country, if not in the bloody Commonwealth, where the government did this kind of thing.
Mm. Now, and there've been other ones.
It's appalling.
The third party appeals was also
another one. So, you know, if you are really, and I bang on this about this all the time, if you're really going to get the economy going, you've got to get the industries that underpin the economy, all right? And that's the resources industry, the fisheries, the farmers, the cattlemen, because they're the ones that generate wealth. Now, Ranger's gone. Ranger single-handedly was contributing about 3-4% of gross state product to the Northern Territory.
And Jabiru's gone with it.
And Jabiru. And don't kid yourself, tourism's going to support that town. It's not. So you've got GEMCO over on Groote Eylandt. It's, from my memory, it's got about another 10-year mine life. Maybe more.
Yep.
So, you know, you're down to one major or two major mines.
Northern Boys has got 10 years left too.
So you've got MacArthur River and you've got the gold out at the Granites and the Tanami area, you know, and there's some small mines coming up and they're all good. They're all good. But we need a mine that's 20 plus years mine life. Now, if this government, CLP government, gets in, they really have to look at attracting investment, which starts with the exploration. And all governments, CLP and Labor, has given money to the exploration initiative within the Department of Mines, the geological people, to go out there pre-competitive and find stuff. So they have to do that. They have to sort out the resource industry when it comes to fracking and onshore oil and gas.
Well, we're going to lose it to Western Australia at the moment. They're talking a big game.
When we are just not competitive at the moment, and that's why simplifying that mining tax regime sends a very strong message. We are open for business and we want you spending your money in the territory.
And I think that highlights a change between 2009, 2010 under a Labor government and now. Remember, we stole the IMPEX project from Western Australia because we had an attitude that said we were going to go out and get it.
But we are very conscious of that. So in terms of the investment, you know, we're putting that into the Department of Business so that people have that one-stop shop where they can go, they can get that support, they can understand the government processes. We do need to make sure that in terms of the environment that we respect that. In terms of exploration, it is at very high levels, if not record levels last year. We are seeing millions in royalties, and what we've got is a system that ensures that Territorians get the money for their resources that are taken, because once they're taken, we don't see that resource back. So in terms of the opposition, though, they need to point out what they're going to cut, because if you're going to be taking these revenue hits...
No, but it's not a revenue hit, and this is where scaremongering serves no purpose. We are in an economic crisis, and what I am showing is leadership on the economy.
All you showed is things that you're going to cut.
By changing the mining tax regime...
You're cutting revenue, which means you're going to have to cut jobs. You've got form, you did it before, and you'll do it again.
It shows how fundamentally little you understand about our economy. And that's why, for the last 4 years, we have had the worst performing economy in the nation, because Labor do not understand business and they do not understand investment. This will not see revenue losses to the territory. This will see an increasing of the pie because it gives certainty. It is a simple tax. It means that investors understand what that tax framework looks like. It means that the territory will be able to calculate what revenues it expects. It means that for every mineral dug out of the ground, Territorians will see a return.
That's not true, and you know it. The CLP will slash royalty revenue, and from that you will slash jobs, you will slash teachers, you will slash nurses.
Listen to
you. You've got form and...
Absolutely pathetic. This is an economic crisis. I have a clear position. Your position is a hybrid mining tax, which is a rubbish system
that does not increase investment. The territory gets the money back into our budget.
It sees
But under the CLP, you will slash revenue, which means you need to slash other things, and
that
that's
is,
what you don't know.
There must
true.
Be an election loop.
It is not
Anyone
true.
Know if there's an election
this
coming
is
up?
Pathetic drivel.
I think there's an election coming.
If we had a budget or a pre-election fiscal outlook, we might be able to see
look, exactly.
exactly what we
Show
need
us
to.
The books. Okay. Show us the books.
You can next Thursday.
Show me the
money. I believe it when I see it.
The thing with this mineral royalty is there will be a drop in mineral royalties because we've lost mines. Okay, Range is a bit different because it was royalty equivalence because it's on Aboriginal land. But what also goes when you lose a large mine is you lose the payroll tax. Like those big companies with big employees, 300 employees, they're paying payroll tax. That's gone. So our own source revenue is down right across the board. Well, there's only about four sources anyway. So you're down in the payroll tax. You're down in
the CLP's scrapping payroll tax. Is that right?
No, we're reviewing payroll tax.
Sorry.
So, you know, that's why you need big employers who employ a lot of people because they contribute a lot to the economy.
You are listening to The Week That Was, proudly brought to you by BTC Constructions. We've got Matt Cunningham, Natasha Files, Kezia Puric and Leah Finocchiaro in the studio. Now, Throb on Point, it is a, well, I guess you'd say a controversial sunset lounge is what it's being proposed as at East Point. And we know that at the moment the City of Darwin have given it in principle approval to be able to go through the other processes, obviously, to get up and running. Plenty of people are really quite opinionated on whether they think that that this location should be able to be used for Throb on Point and to be able to have a bar there. What are your thoughts?
Go to Kezia first.
Well, the feedback I've received from people is no one seems to have an issue with the concept of a night venue, a family-friendly venue, something that goes to midnight, music, whatever.
Yep.
The big issue is putting it at East Point. Now, East Point, it's zoned for, I think, recreational and community purpose, which doesn't allow liquor licensing at all. So, you know, they're going to have to go for rezoning. They're going to, and I sort of, people have queried with me, why haven't they gone through the Development Consent Authority process? Maybe that's coming. But the other key factor that people have mentioned is, I'll call it government, local government land, it's public land. And this business, or proposed business, appears to be getting, you know, a distinct advantage over any other business. So you've got them being supported by the ratepayers of Darwin City Council area, whereas the other kind of business that might be in the CBD is doing it all themselves. So it's a very unbalanced, and it's not competitive, and it would set a very dangerous precedent.
How does Peewees work, though? Peewees obviously has a liquor license.
No, that was a long time ago. That was about 25 years ago. Yep. I think the Darwin City Council wanted to just develop it, from my memory, and they just put it out there, you know, anyone want to tender and set up a restaurant type of thing. So, well, look, but you're right, that does have one, but that's in might be in the slightly different zoning area. I don't know.
I understand, like, I get all those arguments and I totally understand it. To look at things from the other side, you think, here in the Territory, we've got a real issue with when someone comes forward with an idea, sort of talking about all the reasons why something shouldn't be able to happen. And I get that. I totally understand that East Point is a very important location to so many people. Now, obviously, the reason that they've said East Point is a good location is because there isn't residential area around there. So they'd be able to play that music, obviously, and there isn't that residential area around there. We know that places like Mindle Beach and the Esplanade are zoned similarly, and they've got temporary establishments set up. I get the argument, though, when you're talking about commercial entity and them getting free rent, essentially, to be on council land, and that's something that is a bit of a worry. The council, when I spoke to them earlier in the week, said that, well, it's similar to any other event being able to sort of take place on those council areas.
But this is an event that's going to be 7 days a week, or maybe 6 days a week, I don't know. But and I hear what you're saying about we'll take it somewhere where there's no people, and I get that. But I'd be interested to know if they've looked at other venues, and if so, where. Because I'm sure there's suitable venues, like even possibly on the Esplanade, but I know there's people who live in the units and the blocks. But
yeah, that's a classic
NIMBY issue, isn't it? You know, have it anywhere, just not in my backyard.
It's interesting, Katie. Back when we could travel and go to other places, you saw examples in that sort of industrial, particularly around wharves, old wharves and things, where they'd sort of reclaimed that and had been redeveloped. And I think even Brisbane, you've seen some of that. So, I mean, I think that the innovation we've seen with business from coronavirus has been fantastic. And I hope elements of it stay. I think that, you know, that I don't think people mind public space being used for pop-up, and we see that with the Darwin Festival when they roll down into Botanic Gardens and different things. But something like the pictures, it look very... Yeah, permanent. What? So
why not give it a go? Why not let them have a go for the dry season? See how it works. If it doesn't work out, don't do it again.
I reckon that's a good idea. I mean, some of the best nights of my life pre-children were spent at the Throb nightclub, I've got to say.
Look out.
Dude, tell Matt.
Well, with our good friend Ophelia Self, who used to, I think, appear on this program.
Ophelia Bottoms.
But I would hate...
He'll be thrilled.
That place is an institution, and it would be really sad to see it close.
Yep.
And you know, if having this, I think the trial idea is a good idea. You know, if we can try it for one dry season while they're going to be closed anyway, well, let's give it a crack. But then it's the test again of these regulations. I don't think they've got any hope of getting through the DCA and licensing.
People don't feel like they've been consulted about it, though. I mean, you know, it is community space, and certainly we've heard very clearly from the property council that, you know, it's a complicated issue when you start to then compete with the private sector. So it needs to be an open and competitive process if it's going to go ahead, and people need to, you know, be involved in that discussion.
You are listening to Mix 104.9's 360. It is the week that was proudly brought to you by BTC Constructions. Well, you all just got a bit of insight, I think, into what goes on when the microphones are still, when they're off, but I left them still on, and us all teasing each other and me telling Leah to say that on the radio. I'm talking about other things.
And then Kezia is telling stories about the Fred Butts show.
Anyway, that's what we get up to when the microphones are off. I feel like we need another part of the show called When the Mics Are Off, so you can hear exactly what goes on. Sometimes it gets a bit heated.
It could be a nighttime show, maybe. It's not a morning show. It could be an evening show.
I will say, though, it's got nothing on the big issues as far as the microphones go.
Love listening in.
And only imagine.
Well, my CLP friend, Dave Tolner.
Do us a favour and just leave them on one day. Go on.
Just see what happens.
What could go wrong?
Anything, really.
Probably everything.
Everything?
Yeah.
We better wrap up for the morning. It's always great to have everybody in the studio for the week that was. Leah Fenocchiaro, Leader of the Opposition, good to have you in the studio this morning.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to a weekend of getting out and about to our beautiful market, so I'll see you around.
Absolutely.
You could
come to
nightclub
markets. I could.
Oh, maybe I am.
Has had her injections.
Have they found a vaccine for that?
Kezia,
you'll need some sandals.
Kezia, very welcoming in nightclub.
Thank you, Katie, and for those listening out there, the Coolalinga or Fred's Butts markets are on again this Saturday, 8 o'clock. They've got food and plants.
They were very busy last week.
Do they still sell chooks and things?
There's a couple of different people who sell chooks. If people want to buy chickens.
Oh, I don't know. Oh, God.
Buy chickens, contact my office.
Not a wet market, Katie.
No wet markets in the rural area.
Oh, goodness me, we've lost the plot. Natasha Biles.
She's cutting us off.
Thanks, Wolfie.
Matt Cunningham from Sky News.
I've got nothing left to say.
He's shaking his head. He's just shaking his head.
Thank you all for your company this morning.